art and music education has been part of schools for decades, and there's been new movement toward STEAM education, adding art into science, technology, engineering, and math. There's a good chance you took art classes throughout elementary and middle school, maybe beyond. But our next guest says we can take things further and breathe new life into schools if we use the arts to rethink and ultimately save our education system. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you value having art and music classes in schools? What did it do for you, you think, as a person? And did your non-art classes encourage creativity in some way? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Erica Halverson is a professor of curriculum and instruction at UW-Madison's School of Education and the mayor of Whoopin'Soccer, a youth arts program based in Madison. Erica is the author of How the Arts Can Save Education, Transforming Teaching, Learning, and Instruction. She recently started a podcast. It's called Arts Educators Save the World. Erica, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with an important distinction here. I think when I think of art classes, I think elementary school, we took a break, walked over to art class, did art. Or high school, I took as many band classes as I could. You're talking about something different, though. Kind of having an artistic mindset, I think, behind education. Can you talk about that?
Sure. First of all, I want to say that I also think about the concept of the arts more inclusively, to consider any kinds of disciplines where people produce things. So the performing arts, the visual arts, the media arts, all are encompassed under this umbrella of arts and arts education and art making. And then also to talk a little to your point about art making, not just as a distinct and separate task from the quote unquote real work of school, but of artistic ways of knowing and doing and being as central to what it means to teach and to learn and to become human across all the spaces where we think about education and schooling.
Can you paint us a picture of what that might look like in the classroom?
Sure. So one of the core things that we learn when we make art is how to create representations. That is, how to take an idea, a concept, a story, and retranslate it using the medium of a particular art form. So a painting is a representation. A theatrical performance is a representation. A TikTok video is a representation. The same core mechanism that we value in art making is exactly what we hope our learners across all of our disciplines can learn to do in school. So a math equation is also a representation. It uses the tools of mathematics to communicate a complicated idea that is difficult to share using other mechanisms of communication. So my vision for reinvigorating life and creativity into schools is to recognize how the arts give young people access to the kinds of practices that we really care about that they do in all of their schooling lives across the full school day. So it might look like a project that stretches across the visual arts classroom and the mathematics classroom. It might look like using some of the tools of teaching in improvisation and applying those to the science classroom. It might be something as simple as giving kids the opportunity to take risks in their classroom space that they might not otherwise take without working together around an artistic process in order to get free them up to do the disciplinary academic work in the other parts of their school day.
You just mentioned risk-taking, and I wanted to talk about that a little, because, you know, at various points in my schooling and professional life, the main thing I wanted to do was not be wrong.
Yeah.
And that isn't always the most conducive to learning stuff. Can you talk about the value of risk-taking and the opportunity to be wrong?
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges we face in the current failure-focused environment of schooling is how do we communicate both to kids, but also to educators, that failure is a part of learning and not a lack of learning. How do we encourage learning environments, that is classrooms, after school spaces, sports teams, interactions between tutors and students? How do we encourage them to think about trying new things, trying ways of knowing, putting out there ideas that you may or may not believe to be ultimately the best answer as part of what it means to do learning? And learning to take risks is the most effective mechanism for that. And for better or worse, as you probably know, and as all listeners know, you can't simply say to people, okay, now it's time to take risks, and magically people open up toward risk taking. You have to, what we call in education speak, scaffold their capacity for risk taking. And I love the scaffolding metaphor because it invokes images of a building held up at first by an external set of tools that then slowly are taken away as the infrastructure for the building is built and can then stand on its own. And so in my book, and in my work with arts educators, I talk a lot about what are the kinds of scaffolds that arts practices allow us to build so that we can eventually take them away and embed risk-taking into the everyday practices of teaching and learning.
Talking to Erica Halverson from the UW-Madison School of Education. New podcast called Arts Educators Save the World. You could join in at 800-642-1234 as we talk about arts and creativity, how to get them into the classroom, not just the art classroom or music classroom, but all day long. If you're a teacher, what do you think of the ideas you're hearing? Are you able to do this? Have you found ways to do this in your own classes? As a student, past or present, were there teachers, were there classes that really stimulated your creativity? And did it help you learn more? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Erica, this new podcast, Art Educators Save the World, just out last week. Want to listen to a bit of it? Lin-Manuel Miranda on here and Robert Lopez and their teacher, Barbara Ames, in a conversation. Here's Lin-Manuel Miranda talking about a life-changing teacher.
It was life-changing for me. I think the direct education we got from Barbara wanting us to like go headlong into running our own show and the empowerment that comes with student-run theater, because I saw from seventh grade onward what could be done. And then I directed West Side Story my senior year for musical rep. And I grabbed the stuff from the movie I wanted to. I did the Boy Girl America. I swapped Krupke and Cool. I went to the Barbara Ames School of Make the Best Show Possible for Your Students.
Also, I believe your teacher, Barbara Ames, was the let's put on a show model of teaching. Could you talk a little bit about what you got out of that conversation?
Oh, so many things. I mean, not to sell my own radio, but I would encourage everyone to subscribe and listen to these amazing conversations. The idea behind the podcast in general is successful artists talking with their mentors about the impact that arts education has had on their lives. And we started with Lin-Manuel Miranda and Bobby Lopez because they had the same transformational elementary school music teacher as did I. And we, all of us, attribute the kinds of experiences that Barbara Ames gave us directly to the kinds of human beings we became. And part of that was Barbara's commitment to engaging all of us in the process of making theater and making music. Part of it was the ways in which she encouraged us to take risks in our own artistic lives as pretty young children. You know, she was our teacher when we were in kindergarten through sixth grade. And you heard a little bit from Lynn, and the same is true for myself. And, you know, if listeners don't know Robert Lopez's name just from hearing it, he is the co-writer of Frozen, the movie soundtrack and musical, along with several other Broadway musicals. So these are incredibly accomplished composers, songwriters, some of the greatest of the 21st century. And Barbara is the one who gave us access to our creative selves as young children and encouraged us to carry that forward through creative projects in our schooling lives beyond our time with her, as Lynn said, into high school, both of them obviously into college, and for myself as an artist turned academic, thinking about the relationship between the stories that she helped me figure out how to tell and improving other people's lives through education. It is an unmatched set of experiences that we got through our education with Barbara.
We're talking to Erica Halverson, professor at UW-Madison School of Education, author of the book, How the Arts Can Save Education. Her new podcast, we were just talking about it, is called Arts Educators Save the World. She's joined us to talk about her research on the value of art in schools and not just in separate art classes. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Did you find in your schooling, say, a teacher, a class, a style of teaching that helped boost your creativity? And did that help you grasp difficult topics along the way? If you're a teacher yourself, do you find ways to encourage creativity in your students? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Erica Halverson, UW-Madison education professor, author of the book, How the Arts Could Save Education, with us today to talk about a research on the importance of using art in the classroom, not just in the art classroom. You could join in at 800-642-1234 to share your experiences, maybe your questions for our guest about how to put some of these ideas into practice. Again, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in a caller now. Michael is with us in Spring Green. Michael, hi.
Hi. I was just mentioning the fact that I'm a professor emeritus, taught at the University of Wisconsin-Madison for many decades in the art department. And I had students, young adults from all kinds of different fields that were in my classes, different majors, everything from computer science to medicine. I always expected that out of the group, maybe one would become an artist. But what I think the arts really contributes to a bigger picture is the idea that the critique and criticism is a very valuable skill. And it encourages critical thinking, which can apply to just about any profession. And I think art people that have art backgrounds see things differently than just any other person does. And it's because of that ability to see things in different ways that they can apply those skills to just about any profession.
Michael, thanks for the call. Erica, what do you think?
Yeah, that Michael was not a plant, although I think very well could have been. Critique practice is a great technique for engaging teachers who maybe aren't arts teachers in some of the ways of knowing and doing that we really value in the arts. In my own classes at the university, I teach folks who are planning to become teachers, and I also teach folks who are artists who want to become teaching artists, that is, teach in their lives but maybe not become certified classroom teachers. And one of my favorite days is a day I call Getting Beyond Good Job, which is where we learn how to talk to one another about the work that we make to develop some of those critique skills that Michael was talking about. So learning to notice, that is engaging with a piece of artwork, whether that's a piece of visual art or performance art, and learning to notice things in the work is an excellent mechanism for developing teaching and learning technique that can be utilized across different disciplines, because it allows us to engage with one another's work without evaluation, first of all, and by giving the kind of productive feedback that allows people to improve on their representations, on the ways in which they're communicating ideas to each other.
Michael, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. And Erica, for somebody wanting to put that idea into practice, I think we hear words like critique and criticism and think, here's how the thing you did was bad. And that's clearly not what you're talking about. For somebody, maybe a teacher out there listening who wants to do this in the classroom tomorrow, what could that look like?
Yes. So there, I mentioned learning to notice. I have a very simple set of questions that I use to teach about critique that I've adapted from Harvard Project Zero, which is a very well-known kind of arts education research house around the country. And they have a lot of free resources on their website. But my kind of simplified version of critique is having people present work to one another and asking everyone to respond to the questions, what do you notice? What does this remind you of? And what do you still want to know? And the reason I like those questions is that they surface the parts of someone's work that stand out to others without any evaluative language associated with it, right? So for example, someone might notice the vibrant colors in a painting. That doesn't mean you like the vibrant colors, you don't like the vibrant colors, but you notice those colors. And that is an opportunity for feedback and conversation, where the artist can say, yeah, I was really thinking the vibrant colors could do A, B, or C. Or, you know, I hadn't really intended for vibrant colors. I see that everyone is noticing that. Here are the kinds of changes I'm going to make to this work in order to make the colors less vibrant, so that is not the first thing that people notice when they examine my work.
Talking to Erica Halverson, professor at UW-Madison School of Education. Erica has a new podcast called Arts Educators Save the World, talking about creativity in our schools. Erica, something that always strikes me, you know, when I think back to my math education, a lot of it was a chore, drudgery in a lot of ways. And then when I interview mathematicians, they're talking about how much creativity goes into problem solving and how much they play with numbers. I mean, they're doing hard stuff too. How do we get that spirit from the pros and bring it into the stuff that K through 12 kids are getting?
Oh, that is such a great question. You know, I have also heard that from mathematicians. And you hear all the time about the connections between making math and making music, making math and making art. There's some really exciting research around how very old arts practices like weaving are highly mathematized. And there's incredible research going on that starts with the mathematized arts practices and uses those practices as a mechanism to move toward some of the more standard representational tools that we use in math classes. So I would say step one begins with identifying the arts practices that are themselves mathematical. And rather than requiring we start with the standardized math practices and require students pass through those before, quote unquote, getting to the good stuff, what if we started with the good stuff and used those opportunities as a way in to the standardized mathematics practices?
We just have a couple minutes left, and I don't want to get out of this without talking about whooping soccer. I was going to try to describe it to people, and I don't think I have the right words. What is whooping soccer? What do you do?
Yep. So whooping soccer is a community arts outreach program that's based here in Madison, Wisconsin. We are an artist in residence program. So we bring professional teaching artists into third and fourth grade classrooms. And we work with an entire grade of students on creative expression through writing and improvisation and performance. We each week brings a different theme for creative expression, from writing and telling stories from pictures to telling true stories, to learning a little about playwriting and the tools of playwriting as a form of expression, to writing arguments that allow young people to make change in their world. We give them opportunities to write together, to write alone, to dictate, to perform each other's stories. And then at the conclusion of the residency, our group of teaching artists, many of whom are also professional performers in the Madison community, create an entirely original vaudeville-style sketch comedy show of the kids' work. And we bring the kids to the Madison Youth Arts Center, and they all have an opportunity to see their work performed on a professional stage by professional artists as a mechanism of validating their ideas as not only creative, but valuable for the community at large.
And in just our last few moments, Erica, it's a new school year. Leave us with a bit of encouragement.
Oh, it's a new school year. I think all of us are entering it with a bit of trepidation. I like to lead with joy. I like to lead with the idea that coming together in community to make new ideas is an act of joy. And arts practices are the best way I know to infuse joy into our learning systems. So I would say, let's start the year with joy by valuing the artistic ways of knowing and doing that kids naturally bring to learning. And let's lift those mechanisms of expression up as valid, as valued, and as a way to bring all kids productively into our learning environments.
Erica, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Erica Halverson, professor at the UW-Madison School of Education and mayor of Whoopin' Soccer, a youth arts program we were just talking about based in Madison. Erica is the author of the book, How the Arts Can Save Education, Transforming Teaching, Learning, and Instruction. She just launched a podcast. It's called Arts Educators Save the World. And you could still share your stories of creativity in teaching and learning, maybe an art class or a creative teacher who inspired you at some point along the way. You can let us know about it over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can also email ideas@WPR.org.